This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 Monday afternoon, September 23rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. As we enter fall, it's a perfect time to take a close look at your finances and make some adjustments as needed. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, it's a big week for economic data, also for earnings reports. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tom Hudson, financial journalist in Miami. Tom, thank you for joining us today. And not too long ago, Tom, the discussion of an upcoming inflation report was enough to send the markets reeling, or at least make them very nervous. But now the latest numbers on inflation almost seems like yesterday's news.
Oh, remember those days, Rob, of June and July and August, right, when the latest monthly inflation figures mattered. They still matter. We're going to get the big number on Friday. By the big number, it's not the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, but rather the PCE, the inflation gauge that the Federal Reserve looks at. And here, really the market looking for confirmation of what the Federal Reserve and its Open Market Committee talked about last week when it decided to cut interest rates for the first time since the pandemic in 4 years.
Now, obviously, the PCE is the Fed's preferred gauge. They have their own methodology. But you can make a pretty reasonable guess as to what the PCE figure is going to be by going back and looking at the Commerce Department numbers and doing the math based on that.
Looking for a fairly tame environment, certainly much tamer than what we had 6 months ago, and yes, definitely the last 12 months, this slowing down of the rate of inflation is very important to underpin the Federal Reserve's confidence that it's not going to declare victory over inflation, but it feels much more comfortable that it is marching the ball toward the goal line on inflation while watching the unemployment rate and the jobless rate beginning to cool. And that has given it the confidence that now's the time to cut rates. And the jawboning that's happening this week to explain last week's decision and begin to set expectations for the rest of the year.
And speaking of confidence, we have consumer confidence coming out tomorrow. Yeah. And once again, the consumer confidence figure, is that once again just the is that the gas price report, or are there other factors that play into how John and Jane Q. Public feel about their financial situation these days?
I think there's two other economic pieces and then something more, social. I think the two other pieces, in addition to the gas price report, interest rate impact, right, and job impact, I think those go into the consumer confidence. But also, you know, not that we're counting days, but we're 42 days away from Election Day here, Rob, right? Early voting and some ballots are already going out for overseas voters. So I think that uncertainty can be weighing on confidence as well.
And this is something that a lot of analysis about consumer confidence and is that it's tied to people's political beliefs more than ever before. And thanks to social media, Election Day never ends. It seems like there's a certain portion of the American population, regardless of ideology, they're always on a combat footing when it comes to fighting their political foes online. And that could bleed over into some of the economic figures we get on a monthly basis.
Certainly when it comes to those kind of confident gauges, anything that is asking someone in the economy how they feel, what they believe about something, that all of a sudden turns into a data point. So it's a feeling or a belief that turns into an empirical statistic. And, you know, listen, we hope that there's enough people in these kind of surveys that it's going to control for perhaps feelings or beliefs that are on the margin or on the far wide or left on the spectrum. But at the end of the day, you're still talking about how people feel in the economy. But let's watch how they're actually behaving. Let's watch home sales. Let's watch retail sales. Let's watch job figures, spending figures. I think those are just as important, and if not more so important, because it's really the feeling that's then being articulated with action for consumers.
Tom Hudson, financial journalist in Miami, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, giving your finances an autumn update.
You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
We are approaching the final quarter of the year, and it's a great time to undertake a financial reset. Let's get some direction from Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner, founder of the Engage Wealth Group based in Chicago, the website engagewealthgroup.com. Ed, thank you for joining us today. And the changing of the seasons tells me a couple of things. And one thing it tells me is that I have to put on my to-do list to clean out the garage and pick up all the clutter from the summertime, sweep out all the leaves that have been blown in over the months. And and you also have to just think about doing the same thing for your finances, getting them ready for the end of the year.
Absolutely, Rob. And why we want to think of like happier endeavors like pumpkin festival going and things like that, yes. I mean, now is a great time of year to take a check-in on a couple of things. One is, like, how did the year go for you in regards to saving and investing and things like that? And then what's coming up for the following year? So take, you know, all your listeners should take some pause now over the next couple of months and really try to figure out those key elements, right, from portfolios and taxes and those kind of things. And again, just kind of taking that breath and kind of cleaning house, if you would, a little bit.
And then when it comes to some things you want to do before the end of the year, when it comes to portfolio rebalancing, how aggressive should you be? How involved should you be in rebalancing your portfolio before the end of the year?
Well, for do-it-yourself investors, right? So basically what rebalancing is, Rob, is kind of looking at your overall asset allocation. And the stock market has done very well this year and actually has done very well since March of 2020. So your stock allocations in your portfolio might be a lot higher than you're comfortable with, because we all like risk, Rob, when it's going up, as we know, but we always have too much risk when it's going down. And so looking at rebalancing, moving monies between, let's say, stocks and bonds or other assets within your portfolio is not a bad idea. But one key element, Rob, is to look at this potentially through a tax lens. Remember, if it's a taxable account and you're rebalancing, you want to try to lock in long-term capital gains and not short-term capital gains. So again, when you rebalance your portfolio and you're moving some assets around, definitely try to look at that from a tax perspective as well to avoid any undue surprises come April.
And then speaking of taxes, is this a good time to put some money in some duds so you can take advantage of some tax loss harvesting?
Yeah, there you go. Tax loss harvesting is a key element, again, in taxable accounts, where if you happen to buy some securities that didn't do well this year, you know, go ahead and look at selling those and kind of rebalancing that portfolio that way. That's always a good idea, because typically in April, people take a rear view look. It's like, oh, I should have, could have, would have done this last year. So look at those elements now. Try to be tax savvy before the end of the year. So come April, you know, you're paying less in taxes than you absolutely need to.
Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of the Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Find him online at theengagewealthgroup.com. Coming up next, a mortgage hack that could potentially save you thousands of dollars a year.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
With the Fed dropping interest rates by a half point, with more cuts to come, they say, you may want to explore some ways to save some money on your mortgage, and you may not have to go the refinance route. We're joined by Steve Kirch, Chicago-based real estate and housing expert. I mean, if you want to save a little extra money on your mortgage, Steve, traditionally you do the refi route, and that requires going through underwriting, that requires coughing up all sorts of pay statements and documents, and it could take a couple of months before you sign on the dotted line for that new refinanced mortgage with a lower interest rate. But Steve, you're saying there is a much faster way to go about doing that.
Well, yeah, it's almost too good to be true, right? Instead of going through all that refinancing nonsense, you call up your lender and say, hey, I'd like to pay a little less on this interest rate. I know rates are falling. What can you do for me? And that's where you're getting into what they call an interest rate or mortgage rate modification. It is something that certain lenders will do, but unfortunately, it's not something that the vast majority of mortgage holders are going to be able to take advantage of, because you really have to have a lender who's holding that loan in portfolio rather than selling it off on the secondary market like so many are today.
Now, what are outside of the fact that outside of, you know, you need to have a lender in which they're holding on to the loan, because I think a lot of people, once you sign the mortgage paperwork, 4 or 6 weeks later, you get a letter from somebody else saying, hey, guess what? Your mortgage has been sold and now your monthly check goes to us. So if that's the case, then you probably can't do it. But also, like, what kind of do you have to have a good credit score? What are some of the factors you need to have this ask be a successful one?
So if you do happen to have a loan at a credit union or maybe a smaller savings and loan local bank, then you can certainly ask them. You're going to have to be up to date on your mortgage. You're going to have to be up to date on the rest of your credit. You don't want any negative marks on there, but you won't have to go through the complete credit check. You're not changing the terms of the loan other than the mortgage rate. So you're still, whether it's 30 years and however much you have left to go, that's what you have. So that's one of the big advantages if you can do it. But you will still have to maintain that credit worthiness.
And also, what kind of leverage do you have over your banker? I mean, even if you have a good relationship with your mortgage lender, is it simply like they'll give you the lower rate because they want to keep your business?
That's exactly what it comes down to. Most small bankers understand where interest rates are headed. They understand that people are going to want to refinance their loans. And a lot of them would rather retain those customers, even if they have to reduce that loan rather than see them disappear. They are probably, however, going to charge you some sort of fee in order to do that. And that's sort of where they make up for that largesse of giving you the lower rate and the lower payment.
Steve Kirch, Chicago-based real estate and housing expert, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, the U.S. considers a ban on certain overseas auto parts for security reasons.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Rachel Pearson. After months of debate, ShotSpotter is officially shut down across Chicago.
A reward is being offered following a deadly shooting at a club in Alabama. The U.S. proposes a prohibition on auto parts from China and Russia for national security reasons. In our stock picker segment, we'll look into an option for investors seeking income while guarding against volatility. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 41 points. The NASDAQ is up 5.5. The S&P 500 is up 8. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, the company behind a disputed gunshot detection system is taking down its equipment across Chicago today. The details from WBBM's Rachel Pearson.
Chicago's contract with ShotSpotter ended just after midnight, meaning alerts to law enforcement have come to a stop and the technology is now being dismantled. Mayor Brandon Johnson promised to end the contract when he first took office, saying ShotSpotter was too unreliable to cost the city tens of millions of dollars. Instead, his office announced the city's requested information on other possible gunshot detection systems. City council members who fought to keep ShotSpotter call the decision reckless and dangerous and worry about public safety in the meantime. Chicago police issued a statement saying officers will continue responding to crime, reminding residents to call 911 if they hear gunfire. Rachel Pearson, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
Police and city leaders in Birmingham, Alabama are pleading with members of the public for information leading to arrests in a weekend shooting that killed four people and injured more than a dozen others. CBS's Christian Benavidez has spoken with one of those wounded, 24-year-old Gabriel Islami.
What sort of injury did you have?
So I had a bullet enter me through my left buttocks, and it went straight through me out of my inner thigh.
Police say multiple shooters targeted one of the four people killed and fled in a vehicle.
Rewards for information in the case total $100,000. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are slightly higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital, author of the book Calculated Risk, based in Chicago. Michael, thank you for joining us today. And it seems like we're entering a period in which the markets can take a breather. We had the interest rate cut last week, that half a percentage point cut, and we have the PCE, the inflation report, coming out on Friday, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, later this week, I should say. But really, there's nothing in the way of major market movers until October 1st, when the quarterly earnings reports show up.
Yeah, good afternoon, Rob, and thanks again for having me on. So we had predicted that it would be 50, not 25. A lot of people thought 25. We did. We were right. We got the 50, and markets then rallied. The issue is that the long bond rates are not coming down. So you're seeing the short term bonds coming down because the Fed's lower rates, but they don't really have control of those long term rates. And so the rally in stocks is going to be muted because the long term rates aren't coming down. And that's what is a better gauge for how dovish the environment is for stocks. So you got a little bit of a rally. We're now at all-time highs, 5,700 plus in the S&P. But I caution investors, we're predicting S&P earnings next year 275. That's one of the higher numbers on the entire street. And even at that number, you're still talking about the S&P forward PE at over 20 times. So we are underweighted stocks, and we have some cash and gold as our alternatives to stocks right now, just because they are so priced in for a great scenario. It's hard to imagine it gets much better than this, and that's why when everybody thinks, and you'd mentioned that you know everything's okay and your coast is clear, that's for market participants that have wisdom, that's actually a time to be cautious, because if you can't see anything that could possibly go wrong, that tends to mean that markets are really, really priced in for perfection, and they are right now. So I would just caution investors that at this time, this is the exact time they should be taking a little bit of profits, being a little bit more conservative. And yes, we could easily melt up to 6,000 in the S&P, especially with election coming in, and if election gets gets done, we rally to the end of the year. But I'm just saying that stocks are super pricey here. So the Fed is now dovish. That's what we wanted, but it was expected that they're going to be dovish. So now is a time to just, I think, to be cautious. And I know that's probably a minority opinion, but generally minority opinions are not bad to have in stock markets. So I would just caution that please don't get hugely long into this thinking that everything is okay. Because if inflation, you say the PC comes in Friday, if that comes in hot, in other words, inflation rears its ugly head just a little bit, you're going to see the long bond sell off, yields will go higher, and then all of a sudden the stock market is going to start dropping. So I'm not saying that's going to happen. I just think investors need to be aware that there are still major risks to this rally. And if anything, this is a time to be more cautious.
And you also bring up a good point, and that is the value of contrarian thinking, and that is you should challenge your assumptions. I mean, not only in how you think the markets are going to unfold, but it probably helps you in all other facets of life as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but, you know, we predicted the 50 cut as opposed to 25, and we bought a bunch of 6-month treasuries because that's the exact instrument that benefited the most by being right on that. But, you know, we did not buy a bunch of stocks because we feel that the long rate, which has a more of a bearing on stock prices, is not going to come down anymore because it's already, you got the 10-year at like 3.75. I don't think it's going to go much lower than that. So what's going to happen is the short-term rates are going to come down, and then we're going to have a flat yield curve. And flat yield curves are not necessarily bullish, and especially where inflation is still not, in my opinion, completely tamed, I think investors need to be cautious here. And you don't hear that on CNBC or these other financial sites, because they're just going with the FOMO. And I'm just telling you, this is the time to be cautious. Doesn't mean you don't stay long. We're long, but we're underweighted. And I would just suggest to investors, if they have huge profits in certain stocks, take a little bit of profit right here. There's nothing wrong with that. And just wait, because there's definitely a chance we have a pullback.
Michael Palumbo, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Commerce Department is proposing a ban on some Chinese and Russian-made car parts. Let's find out why from John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. John, thank you for joining us today. And when we're talking about Chinese and Russian-made auto parts, we're not talking about overseas mufflers.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, this applies to imported Chinese cars, but it also, as you just said, applies to components, both hardware and software on this. And I think there's two things going on here, Rob. Number one, the U.S. government is very concerned about Chinese technology that can capture information about Americans and connected cars, and especially autonomous cars, you know, and they've got all kinds of sensors on them. These vehicles do. They've got radar, and they've got LiDAR, and they've got cameras, and they've got ultrasonic sensors. So they can collect a lot of data. And the fear is that data will be beamed back to China. So there's that going on. But there's something else that the Commerce Department didn't talk about. And that, as you know, is that first, the Trump administration put tariffs on Chinese electric cars, 25%. The Biden administration is raising that to 100% tariffs on imported Chinese cars. But what if those Chinese cars are actually made in Mexico? Then they're not Chinese cars. Under the, you know, the USMCA, the free trade agreement between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So there's a fear that the Chinese will go into Mexico and start getting into the American market as a back door. But if those cars are prohibited because they're connected cars, and that has national security implications, I mean, this is a more effective way of keeping Chinese cars out of the American market than the tariffs are.
And at the same time, though, this seems like this exists on the same intellectual spectrum as the TikTok ban. And that is, this car has tech that could be sent to some hostile power and the data can be used for nefarious purposes.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's not necessarily just directly nefarious. But, you know, in today's world of generative AI, data is the new oil. Data is what's going to feed economic growth. It's going to feed all kinds of insights into things. And, you know, clearly if the Chinese can take information about Americans, either through cars or through TikTok, that's something that greatly disturbs the intelligence community because they see it as a national security risk.
I mean, just going away from the foreign policy aspect of it, I mean, when you get inside, let's say, an American-made car, a car made by one of the Detroit Three, it's a 2025 model, and what kind of data is your brand-new American car sending to the automaker?
Well, it's collecting all kinds of stuff, and I would say, you know, look, this goes beyond cars. It includes your phones. Your cars, your phones, they know where you are. They know where you're going. They know where you've been. They know probably where you're going to go. They've got access to your calendar. They know what you're shopping for. They know what you're searching for. This is incredibly valuable data. So your American-made car, you know, and you said by the Detroit 3, it doesn't matter if it's Detroit or not. I mean, Toyota, Honda, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Tesla, you name it, they're all doing it. They're collecting this data, and you know, if it's used within the United States, that doesn't bother the administration that much. But if that info is being beamed to China, then they're definitely worried about it.
John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv in Detroit. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, an investment strategy that can yield nearly 15% annually.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and today we're exploring the covered call strategy, how it works, and how to effectively implement it by using covered call ETFs. Joining us to explain is Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers in Chicago. Find his blog at blueworldam.com. Matt, thank you for joining us today. And for the uninitiated, what is the covered call strategy?
This is going to be a mouthful to get in the time we have. We buy dividend stocks primarily for cash flow, and every time we get paid, our basis in the stock is reduced. So if we initially paid $10 per share for 100 shares, that's $1,000 invested. And then if over the course of the year we get paid $40 in dividends, that effectively reduces our investment down to $960 or $960 a share, because we've recouped some of the cash that we spent to buy the stock to begin with. The great thing is that dividends are not the only way to generate cash flow off of stocks in our portfolio. There is a strategy in option trading called the covered call selling strategy. And to understand this, that a call is the right to buy 100 shares of stock for a predetermined price for a predetermined amount of time. Since a call is the right to buy, when we sell a call, what we're doing is we are selling someone else the right to buy 100 shares of stock from us at that predetermined price. If we don't already own the stock, the strategy is called naked or uncovered call selling, and that can be very risky. On the other hand, if we already own 100 shares of the stock, it is far less risky, and it's a way to pull cash out of our stock position without actually selling any of the shares. Now, to do this ourselves requires a lot more education than what we can explain here.
I was going to say, Matt, that sounds like an awful lot of work. I mean, I'm sure it's worth every penny, but it's an awful lot of work.
Well, that's where we're headed here with the ETFs. I was going to say, don't run right out and try to start doing this for the first time after the show. But what we can do is we can buy shares of an ETF whose strategy is to sell covered calls and distribute those premiums as an additional way to generate cash flow off the portfolio. So to your point, somebody else does all this work for us. And the really advantageous thing about this is oftentimes these pay monthly instead of quarterly, like a dividend would, and they can be as broad-based or as narrow as we want. For example, some of the more popular ones are based on the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, the Russell 2000, and those generally give you an annual yield of about 13%. So there is some real money to be made with these, and it's very efficient because, like you said, somebody else does all the work because it is a lot of work.
Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers, thank you for joining us today to explain the covered call strategy and talk about covered call ETFs. They do the work for you. Thank you for joining us today.